U.S. politicians and policymakers are preoccupied with how to pay for health care. Hardly any thought has been given to what should be paid for. That's according to an article in the July 2011 edition of the American Journal of Bioethics entitled Rationing Just Medical Care. The author joins us now on the Bioethics Channel. His name is Dr. Lawrence Schneiderman, Professor Emeritus at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. He's speaking to us from La Jolla, California. Dr. Schneiderman, first, we must say you're a brave man to take this on. Are we still at a state where even the suggestion of rationing health care automatically shuts down the debate?
I'm afraid you're right that this country, as I point out in the article, is still living in the cowboy era where everyone is strong and indestructible, and we're Americans, and we do everything for ourselves. And we haven't done what the folks in Europe have done, which is accept the notion of what they call solidarity. That is, we're all in this together, so what you do will affect me. Therefore, let's see how we can do the right thing that's best for all of us. And a very important thing is, even though I think the people are more ready for it than the politicians are, I think the politicians are running the debate. There's an interesting quote, allegedly attributed to Henry Kissinger, that power is the best aphrodisiac. One of the things about politicians is that fear is the best aphrodisiac, that if they can scare people, they can usually get what they want, which is to be reelected. I think that's where we are right now. People are really finding what would be their own notion of what is fair, what is good for all of us, being captured by, I'm afraid, a lot of demagoguing politicians. That's what I see now.
You began your article with a statement that terminology makes a difference. In this case, health care is quite different from medical care. How does that change the terms of your suggested approach?
Well, I think it's very important, because when I first was discussing this with colleagues, I had very good friends who are interested in this issue who said, but you know that medical care is only a small part of what makes people healthy. And they point out quite rightly that things like education, housing, race, income level, so many of those other things that are outside of medicine affect whether or not somebody will be able to live a healthy life. And yet, although, and I think Larry Churchill made the point, and I'm not sure, I don't know who has estimated this, but although 90% of health is outside of medicine, and that medical care and medical treatments only account for about 10% of health, nevertheless, medical care accounts for 90% of expenses. So I told my friends, and I say in this paper, okay, look, I acknowledge that I'm only dealing with a small part of what is good for health, but this is the largest part of what's accounting for costs. And so let's see what we can do about being fair and rationing medical care.
Then that leads us into the question of how we are preoccupied with how to pay for health care instead of giving thought to what should be paid for.
That's right. And you have just said what has been the essential idea of my paper. I mean, I've always been struck as a practicing physician, as a medical ethicist, as somebody who reads the newspapers and, you know, hears what's going on, that we spent hours and days and years debating this gimmick versus that gimmick, you know, whether we should increase this and decrease this, who's going to pay. And it's almost as though we were saying, okay, it's time to buy a car, you know, and so who's going to pay, and how much are they going to pay, and what are the terms, and how long will they be able to keep it, without ever saying, well, here's what the car is and does, and what kind of car would you like, and, you know, it's just amazing how the debate has become so vituperative and passionate, but nobody is saying, here we are in a society that more than any other advanced society has a substantial number of people without any health care coverage. And we want to talk about how we're going to do it and afford it. And we're not even talking about, well, what is this thing we are talking about? What should be the qualities and the characteristics of that thing that people call healthcare, which I call medical care? We're just not talking about that.
Then you propose an ethical and fiscally responsible way out of this mess, as you term it, by focusing on what medical outcomes should be achieved in a just society, and that's where you start describing what you describe as a decent minimum. Talk about that.
Okay, the decent minimum is a term that philosophers have used to say, look, when we ration anything, and in particular medical care, we're already knowing and trying to deal with the fact that everybody can't have everything. And this is something that is very hard for Americans right off the bat. Why can't I have everything? And why can't I have what the rich guy has? The fact is, we would not be able to afford it and provide it if we talk about everybody having everything. But in a just society, everybody should have a decent minimum. That is, the kind of medical care that allows them to participate in society, to fulfill their goals, to live as comfortably as possible, to maximize their opportunities. So this is what we're trying to achieve. And up to, I think, this paper, because I've, you know, searched the literature and talked to a lot of people, nobody's really gone out on a limb to say, in a just society, what is it that would constitute a decent minimum? People have said, oh, we should have it. And the few suggestions that were made is, oh, everybody should be able to maximize their own social and physical well-being. The problem is that that doesn't deal with issues where some medical costs for some people would be so exorbitant with minimal improvement that it's denying, and probably we would agree unfairly, denying possibilities for greater improvement in large numbers of other people. And that's the problem. The trade-off has never been addressed. And that's where I came up with, well, now look, if we want people to prosper, we need a society that is able to support them. And a society, in return, wants people to prosper in a way that makes it possible for that society to continue to support these people. And so there is this kind of interdependence between an individual and society. The individual obviously would like to, and society would agree, to raise a family, get a good education, and hold on to a job. And so I say, look, let's talk about a just medical care system and look at it in terms of the medical outcomes that permit a person to achieve those goals. Society would say, yeah, that's good. You're getting what you want, and we're getting what we want. No, not everybody would be able to do that. There are folks who are incapable of doing those things. What would a decent minimum be for those people? And there's where we say, and I use the term reasonable because this is a term of art that's used in the law and used in medical ethics. It's not easily defined, but on the other hand, one comes around to a notion of reasonable, the reasonable person, the reasonable common sense decision. And usually it takes time to settle on precedents, but I say these folks deserve a reasonable level of function and comfort and freedom from pain and other forms of suffering that is maintains their dignity. And again, dignity is another term that people say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. The fact is, we all have a notion of dignity, and we come around to what enables this person to feel the best possible as a functioning person, even if the functioning is minimal.
This approach is dramatically different than how most of us look at this, where there's a basic package of services and supplies that should be covered. But you note that there's a problem with that, too, and that you get into what kind of age group are you in or what kind of social group that you're in. And a lot of that is determined by politics, and that complicates things, too.
That's right. And that, I try to address that directly. I say instead of this so-called basic package, which is one policy fits all, we have to take into account that some people work hard at physical labor, other people are white-collar workers, some people have other kinds of limitations, mental, emotional, and so the basic package should look at each individual in terms of the medical outcomes that achieve what I consider the decent minimum. And it also just sort of, as I see it, both takes into account the American notion of individualism, because each person could choose his or her own way of pursuing education, work, raising a family. There's nothing stated as a requirement by any overarching authority. Each individual can choose one's own life, and society at the other end says, look, all we're interested in is that you do your best at what you want to do, and we will ration, and now here's the other distinction. We will only put people on the list for expensive, life-sustaining, limited, now that's an important point, limited treatments for those people who fulfill the first level, decent minimum, because those are the ones who are more likely also to help society and there are other people in society. That's the stipulation. Now, the people who can't meet that first level would be therefore entitled to the comfort function level. They're not denied limited life-sustaining treatments like heart transplants and endless days in the ICU, but they're definitely not high on the list. And probably the fact is they wouldn't get those limited treatments simply because right now we can't afford to insure everyone. And so quite clearly there are going to be people that will not be able to be given those treatments under this system.
Dr. Snyderman, this sounds to me like this would be a very controversial approach to accept. And then once it is, assuming that something like that would be, the application of it would be controversial too.
Yeah, and that's, first of all, this does require that all of us recognize what we're trying to do and accept it as a necessary part of living together in a just society. That what I'm describing, there's no alternative. This is what we're going to do if we live in a just society. Otherwise, we continue what we're doing now, which is a very unjust society. And substantial numbers of people get no health care insurance. The people who get it are there by sort of political categories. And as I point out in the article, even including prisoners, I mean, a prisoner is guaranteed life-sustaining treatment that's limited after U.S. Supreme Court decision said that that's what has to be given to them, whereas thousands of people out in the world who are trying to make a living and work who have no health care insurance, they will not get it. And that's just one of the many injustices. So first of all, you have to understand philosophically Americans have to come around to it. Then when we try to put it in place, I point out that there should be a transparent way of making these decisions and then appealing these decisions. And right now, there are at least two ways that Americans can go to a board authority that would review not medical decisions, but their qualifications under these terms. And that has to do with appealing, for one example, appealing a health insurance decision. Those boards exist now. A person who wants to challenge them can go, and all that those boards do is say, you're right, this is what your insurance form says and your policy says, and this is what you're entitled to. The same sort of decisions could be made by someone who feels unjustly denied being put on the list of eligibility for a heart transplant, say. And that is the way that the appeals process has to be part of this.
You end your article by stating, sooner or later, we are all going to have to do something better than what we are doing now. That sounds like something that most of us can agree on anyway.
Yeah. And I point out, if you're going to be a critic of this article, and we know that there are critics of this kind of approach, please tell me what you propose that's better. And I say, I hope you can show that your approach does a better job of balancing idealism with realism and compassion with practicality. In other words, don't just say, oh, this is a terrible idea, goodbye. Say, here's what I propose as an alternative that takes into account all the issues that I raise in my article.
The article is entitled Rationing Just Medical Care. The author is Dr. Lawrence Schneiderman, Professor Emeritus at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. And it can be found in the July 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.